fundamentally, the unknown. How can we possibly succeed in treating so many of these unfortunate individuals like schizophrenia and the like, when we could very well consider the aspect of what we call in Kabbalah the Dibuk, an exorcism which is so clearly spelled out in Kabbalah. Now, these were the most foremost sages of our times. Now, if I professed to start a new religion today, and this was my thinking, I'd agree. Maybe I'm looking for a new religion. But I have never quoted anything in that book that was not documented by some acceptable, credible sage so many thousands of years ago. And established religion, all religions, going to have to come and face up to that.
What kind of reaction are you getting now from the leaders of the different Jewish religions that there are now to these teachings and this insight? Curiosity, or do they look upon you as some sort of a maverick?
Well, fortunately, it's both. So we're having a great number of clergy of all religions, even from Kuwait, who have shown an interest. And while they still must conform to the principles of established religion, but the interest and the acceptability and credibility of reincarnation is growing amongst the clergy, more so than you, Bill, would even imagine.
Well, it would be kind of stunning to me to find the clergy too deeply involved in it, other than to try to poo-poo it and put it down for some reason or another.
Well, you can't poo, you know, you can't put it down when we're referring and we're kind of producing source references, mm-hmm, of people with credibility.
There is, as we look at these many, many cases that the regressionist will do with people, where they start speaking as if they were someone else, living in another time and another place, and perhaps even another sex, speaking languages that they don't know how to speak in this lifetime, you hear that could be just a genetic memory that comes down, rather than a spiritual memory. How do you feel about that? What does the Kabbalah say?
Well, that is that's one of the hints and signs of a prior incarnation, when suddenly an individual can begin speaking a language that, let alone he never studied, but he didn't even visit the country of that particular language. And there he goes, rattles it right off as if this was his native-born land. There is no other explanation other than the fact that this individual lived there in a prior incarnation and has returned for no other reason than to correct a prior offense.
Or perhaps evolve further from where he was. Doesn't necessarily always have to be a correcting process, does it?
No, that's correct, Bill. You can return for the sake of sharing some energy with close ones, or one of the foremost Kabbalists living in Safed, the mystical city in Israel, Rabbi Isaac Luria, who claimed that the only reason for his return was to instruct his student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, in the knowledge of the Kabbalah, and he himself was instrumental in producing our 17-volume work on Kabbalah, the most extensive work, which was just completed some 2 months ago. Unfortunately, it's still in Hebrew, but we're moving right ahead on translation.
We're all going to have to learn how to speak Hebrew.
Well, I don't know about you. I think you know Hebrew.
Dr. Philip S. Berg is my guest tonight. He is the author of The Kabbalah Connection, The Wheels of a Soul, Kabbalah for the Layman. One of the foremost authorities on this thing that is getting attention more and more around the world, the Kabbalah. And we will continue that in just a moment.
Questions for you. Two concepts that I'd like you to discuss. I'm very enthused that you're on the program tonight. In fact, I couldn't believe it when I heard you were going to be on. First, I'd like you to talk about the concept of Olam Haba and why you think so many young Jews aren't aware of this concept that we have the world to come, that there is a physical resurrection in Judaism, that that there is something more than simple death and that that's it. I think among many young Jews, there is this misconception. I have a degree in Judaic Studies, a bachelor's, and I was always amazed in class how many people were shocked when we started discussing and mentioning words like resurrection, but I guess because they grew up in a Christian society wherein that sort of concept is linked with Jesus and the Christians and Revelation, that sort of thing. And as you know, many Jews will shy away from things which they associate with Christianity, which they don't know happen to be very Jewish in origin. I'd like you to talk about that, and I'd also like you to talk about Hashem, about the names of God, and about how in Kabbalah some rabbis have talked about certain names of God, certain ways of putting together the names, and perhaps even using gematria, and being able to create something out of that by being able to capture that essence, that power of God, which happened in Bereshit. Can you talk about that?
Charles, we're going to let him wait on that because I got so wrapped up in talking to him here that I forgot something I've got to do. So we'll be right back. I'll kind of break in on that for just a second before we can get into what's going to be a good answer to a long string of a question, if you don't mind. And we will do that right after the news. We are just going to have to take another pause right here and take a break. Get a cup of coffee, and Rabbi Philip Berg will be back after the news and to answer Charles's questions and your questions, too, about the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is, it's our kind of stuff. We get into astral travel here to Atlantis. And certainly loving one another with an intensity that few people know how to do. It's going to be a good night, so you stay with it. I'm Bill Jenkins.
Happy Celebration 25!
6 minutes past 10 on a Saturday night. Welcome to Hour 2 of Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. We're talking about the Kabbalah Connection. And to make that connection is Rabbi Philip S. Berg, who probably knows as much about the Kabbalah as anyone around. And we think that you'll find it quite fascinating to become familiar with it yourself. Charles was on the line when we left about 10 minutes ago, Charles. Sorry about that. So we'll get back to your question, Charles. Promise you that Philip will answer. Do you want to touch it again? Because just so that he gets all the points.
Okay, well, I guess it was a bit thrown out the first time. What I'd like you to discuss, Rabbi, is the concept of Olam Haba and in connection with that physical resurrection and the concept of the names of God being used in connection with creation of actual physical objects and or physical realities. That's what I'd like you to talk about.
Okay.
That's my question.
Right. I'm right on with your question, Charles. The concept of Olam Haba, for those who are unfamiliar with its Hebrew terminology, refers to the world to come. All religions speak of the world to come. And I guess some of us, many of us, or most of us, may not have experienced the world to come, and so maybe it's some fantasy. But from a Kabbalistic point of view, the definition of Olam Haba is something entirely different. We're not talking about something that comes in the world hereafter. We're discussing that level of consciousness, which unfortunately for most of us remains concealed, unseen, and untouchable. The world of metaphysics. That is the world of Olam Haba, the world of cosmic consciousness, where the past, present, and future all exist at the same time. You know, that only reminds me about what I read in some physics books about the footprint on the Santa Monica beach that will be made. We're observing it right now, but that's going to be made sometime tomorrow by some individual. And we see it right now before he's even gotten to the beach. That implies, from a Kabbalistic point of view, that there are two aspects. The world of the conscious, and what I'd like to refer to as the world of the unreal world, because that involves the five senses, the limitation of five senses, which goes and brings us to a point of what I call the unreal reality. When we speak of the manifestation of Olam Haba, it is that area where suddenly we receive and achieve a pure awareness of things that heretofore had been somehow hidden, concealed. You know, it even reminds me of the most elementary example that I'd like to give when someone's about to tie a package and he's gotten together his string and paper and everything else. And when he's just about ready to tie the package, he can't find the string. And then he looks all over his place, his apartment, and he just can't find it. When he returns back to the place where the package is, lo and behold, the string was there all the time, but he didn't see it. And many of us kind of think we do see things, and we're a little confused. Another example I'd like to give is when sometimes we call our friends and say, you know, I met you at some boulevard, the intersection of two boulevards, but I didn't have a chance to get over and talk to you. And your friend tells you, well, that was impossible. I wasn't in L.A. today. I was in Paris. And then we kind of shy it off and say, oh, well, it probably must have been someone who looked like you. And the answer is no. That was you there, because at that moment, your energy intelligence, the real you, which is not limited, the cosmic conscious level of you, that 90% possibly of you, that can travel faster than the speed of light, can bring you from Paris to Los Angeles in that split moment. And you were there, and I saw you. I saw you physically. We sometimes, refer to that phenomenon as teleportation. But teleportation is right there in the Bible, and I mentioned that in Wheels of a Soul. So Olam Haba is very real, right here, not in the hereafter.
Well, Rabbi Berg, are you saying then that both in the Kabbalistic point of view and in that point of view in reference to other commentary, and specifically Barakot 17a and Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, that there is no world to come, there is no something beyond the point of death wherein man and those who have followed the Noachian precepts have something to look forward to in some other physical earthly realm? Are you saying that indeed, that once men die, whether they achieve that consciousness or not, there is nothing else? Or are you saying absolutely yes or absolutely no?
No, I didn't imply that at all. What I meant to say, the term hereafter that is used in the mainstream of religion generally refers to only a hereafter. Now, there is a place
mm-hmm.
within our universe that after death, the soul awaits its either return to be incarnated for a second time or a third time or for the 1,000th time,
mm-hmm.
or it just remains until the time of resurrection, the time then when all souls will meet its former corporeal body, But this time, rather than the corporeal body having dominion over the soul with its desire to see for oneself alone that greed and corruption which is the energy intelligence of the body, the soul will rule. So there is both Olam Haba and the world where souls reside until such time as they either return for incarnation purposes or at the time of resurrection.
So, Rabbi, then you have answered my question. The answer is yes, that you do agree then that there is a resurrection for us as Jews. I'm talking about totally separate from the Christian point of view or any other. But from our point of view, there is a resurrection, and indeed, there is some, whatever that may be, there is some world. Well, anyway, let's get to my second question very quickly. I know other callers are waiting. In regard to the uses of the names of God in Kabbalah and those references to, and in Zohar, rather, to actual creation, I think in one instance, and I don't have the reference, one rabbi created a cup or something on the table as they were discussing this, as they were involved in using the names of God. And in the same way that the priests of the olden days, that the Kohens brought, used these mighty names of God in the temple, and people were just overshadowed by this incredible name. What do you think of that? Do you think there is creation by that process, or is that, in your opinion, just mythic?
Oh, I guess when I first became involved in Kabbalah, one of the first questions that I began to ask was the Lord a member of the underground or the underworld? I mean, he assumed so many aliases. There were so many names for God. Now, what was the reason for so many names? You know, there is Elohim, there is the Tetragrammaton, there is, I mean, I can just go on and on and on. Now, what is the reason for so many names of God? And so, from a Kabbalistic point of view, and this concept of God, is he a man or what is it? And so, from a Kabbalistic point of view, the Lord for us means the force. An energy force. An energy force of which its energy intelligence represents one constant and one concept alone, and that is the desire to share. There are different levels of that force. That force that, in my new book to be seen shortly, how creation came about by the letters themselves, the Hebrew letters, in which different levels of consciousness exist in our universe. In other words, we go up a ladder. As each one achieves an altered state of consciousness, he doesn't achieve the ultimate as Moses, who could just by uttering a name, as the Bible says, was the way he smote the Egyptian. It was not through a physical force. It was through a combination of letters. In this case, the Tetragrammaton. That Tetragrammaton is a very potent force.
Yes.
That force will be our only protection if that final war of Armageddon ever comes about. That's going to be the only protection for all mankind. That means for Jew and non-Jew alike. So that's what the names are all about. I hope I've answered your question.
Rabbi, it's an excellent answer, and thank you for being a guest. Bye-bye.
He touches it on page 161 of his book, The Kabbalah Connection, if you want to take a look at it. Charles, thank you very much for your question. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Rabbi Philip Berg. Rabbi Philip Berg, about the Kabbalah, that's what we're talking about, and we are talking to Alan. Alan, welcome aboard.
Hi, people. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Hi, Alan.
Dr. Berg made a statement that he felt that moral codes and traditional doctrines were problematic to knowing oneself and higher awareness, and he sort of dropped the bottom line that sharing was the antidote. And I was wondering what the Kabbalah and his perspective or view is on human sexuality. Is it merely a thing of sharing, or is there some moral consideration, say, in regard to premarital sex, for example?
You can put on your Dr. Tony Grant hat.
I've always raised the question, you know, people get married and they have children. And we know that certainly in 20th century that it's quite a problem bringing up children. Yet we still go ahead, excuse me, and people have children now, knowing that there's going to be a lot of problems that follow in having children. And just why do people have children? From a rationale, from a rationalistic point of view, doesn't seem logical at all. And so...
I've often thought that. Had four of them. Wasn't anything rational about that at all.
Right. And yet, that's the way civilization continues. So there must be another driving force, questions the Kabbalah, that somehow, from a cosmic energy intelligence, something enters into most people who do have children, and somehow direct them into having children. For what purpose? Why does this cosmic energy intelligence exist in the first place? The only answer that is found in the Kabbalah is for the purpose of what we call tikkun, or in other spiritual teachings, karmic purposes, and so forth. The purpose of having children, whether we're aware of it or not, is to provide the soul another opportunity. If there was an offense committed by the soul in a prior incarnation, another opportunity to correct the tikkun process, to correct a prior offense. And without a corporeal body, whose energy intelligence is the desire to receive for oneself alone, that's where all negativity in the world arises from, is to provide the soul with free choice, in other words, do good or do bad. And so that is fundamentally the principal reason for having children, whether we're aware of it or not. But in any event, this is the Kabbalistic interpretation. Now, getting into the premarital sex and otherwise, I think I'd probably have to request from you, Bill, let's say, a couple of more weekly Saturday nights, let's say, for the next 4 years, in getting into that subject. But I'm happy to say that will be a second forthcoming book, Our Reincarnation, which will be discussing that particular subject. However, I think we're forgetting one basic idea. Francis Crick, who brought us DNA and then tried bringing us transpermia, in an endeavor to understand the sperm. From a Kabbalist point of view, that sperm is the most potent energy force that exists and is known to mankind. It is used in sex. But I think there is a lack of an awareness of what the individual might be creating, whether on a physical level or a metaphysical level. And the metaphysical level is certainly, for those of you listening to this program, reality. There is an energy intelligence that produces an individual. And no one really even knows how, why, what, and when. But that sperm has the capacity to produce an intelligent human being. There must be an awful lot of power in that sperm. And I think anything with power should be regulated by the individual. And some of the laws surrounding the use of that sperm, the laws that we may be unfamiliar, and nevertheless ignorance of the law is no excuse. And so we in our mind within ourselves can inflict a great deal of damage on ourselves and possibly even on our offspring. But the only thing I can tell you at this point is that we're dealing with a high intelligent energy intelligent force, and I think whatever surrounds the aspect of sex must be treated carefully.
Do you think feel then that, are you saying that it would be more probable to reach an open mind and cosmic consciousness through abstinence, or does it depend solely on the individual? Maybe if he were more, say, involved intimately, he may reach it. Or can you give some sort of statement in...
No, I said that when you have atomic power, you've got to realize the responsibility when you make use of it. Should one abstain from peaceful use of atomic power? Well, that's questionable because we don't even know the results of nuclear power, even for peaceful means. So, when you're talking about this kind of energy intelligence, I would strongly urge, as I do people who are planning on getting married, as I do in my book, you're dealing with energy intelligences of two individuals, and I think you both better get to know each other on another level rather than just with our 5 or 10%. That's really what I'm saying.
So this is clearly a case where you would qualify sharing.
Sharing's gone a long way to achieve a greater awareness, certainly, and I think... That's a step in the right direction.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Alan. Thank you for the question there. It's 28 minutes past the 10 o'clock mark on Open Mind tonight, and we have opened our minds to the Kabbalah. And with us is Rabbi Philip Berg. I'm Bill Jenkins. Back in a moment to see him in person. You mind if I go over this this list with everybody? 4 seminars this coming week at the Stephen S. Wise Temple out in Bel Air. Our good friends over there on Monday and Tuesday, August 5th and 6th. The topic will be the power of the alphabet. That's the Hebrew alphabet. Did I say
that's
it right?
That's right. You did.
For a Texan and doing all right. On Wednesday and Thursday, August 7th and 8th, Dr. Berg will discuss reincarnation, one of our favorite topics, and certainly suggest you get over and catch that. For further information, you can call the Research Center of Kabbalah in Los Angeles. The number here is in the 213 area code 274-5301. Or 552-9884, or you can contact the station here, broadcast information, and Lita will have all of this information in case you didn't get it here. We'll touch it again a couple of times before the evening is done. All right, Alan, you're on.
Oh, hello, Dr. Berg, Bill.
Hi.
The first caller happened to remind me of a text I picked up a number of years ago that was a translation of a French manuscript from, I think, the 16th century. And it was called Abramelin the Mage. Are you at all familiar?
I've heard. No, I'm not familiar with the text itself.
Okay. That was just a side issue. Anyway, I was wondering, in the Kabbalah, what's the nature of the self and God and their relation to each other?
Simply stated, I can quote the sages, and I think they kind of wraps up the understanding of the self and God by simply they feel that man is a part of God. Now, when you say a part of God, and I think I touched on that before, and we're not referring to an individual, we're referring to that within each and every single one of us there is a part of that force that is all-encompassing, where past, present, and future is all in one in the present. And we're all part of that. The question of making ourselves aware of this inner self, that part which the corporeal body has no dominion over. I think that's our objective in that. So we're, you know, the self and God is really one.
Okay, is there any dimension to God that goes beyond that self?
The force includes all peoples of this earth. In other words, when I said we're part, that implies that every single individual, all of humankind, and sometimes even the lower kingdoms of inanimate vegetation and animal, all can encompass through the process of the tikkun process, reincarnation process. We might even find some happy individuals residing there for a short while. And it's all part of the all-embracing unified whole called the Force.
Okay, so it's not like God is a separate person or anything of that nature.
No, a person is not a correct word from a Kabbalistic point of view.
Okay, in what way?
We just couldn't picture a person, because for us a person is someone very finite, and when we discuss the self, we've even gone out of the bounds of the finite, of the corporeal body. When we speak of the self, we're talking about something metaphysical. Now we've got to transcend that up to the all-embracing, unified whole called the force of the Lord, that energy force of the Lord. We have no comprehension what the Lord himself is about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I heard him referred to as just a core of pure loving energy that seems to solve a lot of questions.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, you mentioned that soul, I guess. I take it you speak of actually an entity as far as the soul, that constitutes an entity of some sort.
Yes.
Okay, you mentioned that the soul takes up, can either be reincarnated or take up residence until this end process or end phenomenon that you mentioned. I have two questions on that. What determines whether a soul is going to be, what or who determines whether a soul is going to be reincarnated or not? And what is the experience of the soul that's not reincarnated?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow your second question.
Okay, well, we know what our experiences are as human beings.